Aston does this. And that is just a little token that we can actually make or to show some appreciation for the Lord or his pure devotees making advent, just for the purpose of creating or facilitating the living entity's spiritual emancipation. Now, it's different in the sense that you find in other traditions, like the Christian tradition, for instance, on Christmas Day, that's the day that everybody, that's the day for declared sinful involvement. So, when we understand that the Lord appears just to be able to protect, or not only protect, but even to vanquish the demons, to be able to create a peaceful and enduring situation for the devotee, then we should really be grateful to the Lord. And hence, today we are fasting till sunset. So, as a point of a discussion, we're going to touch some few things, but then I wanted us to look at text 2 of the 10th chapter of the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is giving us like a background of Lord Ramachandra's appearance and his glorious leelas. Tashyapi Bhagavanisha Sakshat Brahma Mayo Hari Ansam Sena Chaturdagat Putra Tram Pratita Surai Rama Lakshmana Bharata Satrugna Iti Samgyaya. Bharata Natajis
Sakshati Bhagavanesha Sakshat Brahmayo Hari
Utakam patitasura Malakshmana Bharata Satrugna iti sangaya. So word for word translation. Tasya
of him
Maharaj Dasarat Api
also
Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Esha, all of them. Sakshat, directly. Brahma Mayaha, the Supreme Param Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Amsa Amsena. By an expansion of a plenary portion. Chaturdha. by fourfold expansions. Our God accepted. Put sonhood. Party taha. Being prayed for. Surai by the demigods. Rama. Lord Ramchandra. Lakshmana. Lord Lakshmana. Bharata. Lord Bharata. Satrughna. Lord Satrughna. Iti. Thus. Sanjaya. By different names. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace is confirmed, Acharya. Sila Abhay Charanavinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Satrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasarath. Please responsibly repeat. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Rama, Lakshman, Bharata, and Satrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasarath. So let us listen to Srila Prabhupada's purport with rapt attention. Lord Ramchandra and his brothers, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Satrughna are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anandim, Anantarupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5:39, Ramadi Motishu Kala Niyamane Natista. The Lord is situated in many forms as such as Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Satrughna. And these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead. And they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramachandra, Lakshman, Bharata, and Satrughna, who, being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasarath in response to prayers by the demigods. Om Gyana Timirandusya Gyana Janasarakaya Saksora Militam Jena Tismai Sigurdu Maha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nebhisesa Sunyavadi Pachatya Visutarini Vancha kalpatari bhyacha kripa sundubhya evacha patitanam pavani bhyo vaishnavi bhyo. So This is called a good morning. In fact, this today fits in that language or that concept of good morning, because the Lord has appeared. And it gives the devotees a lot of joy, because it is a chance for us to be able to hear about the Lord's pastimes and purify our existence. Therefore, this morning, just after the Mangalarti, there was some reading on Ramachandra, and after the Guru Puja again, there was some reading. So, sometimes people hear the devotees preach very powerfully outside, and they come to our temple, and then, you know, they hear us, you know, give some narrations, tell some stories, and then they feel, I had these guys talk, you know, big philosophy, and I came to their temple and I just had them, you know, telling some stories. They don't understand that, you know, these are not just ordinary stories, these are pastimes of the Lord, and they are highly purifying. So, having read the purport and the text, which is giving us a background why Lord Ramachandra and his expansions appeared, of course, we understand that Lord Krishna had mentioned in the Gita that whenever there are some discrepancies in the religious system, then he makes his appearance. Not only does he make his appearance just for the sake of setting up or rectifying the discrepancies in the religious system, but he comes specifically to be able to protect the sadhus. And so here is a typical case in pursuance of what Krishna mentions in the Gita. Paritranaya sadhu, he came to be able to protect the sadhus. So here the demigods, like we had in the text here, the demigods had to pray for the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. Why? Apparently there were discrepancies in religious principles. If you read the Ramayana, you'll find how the sages were having a lot of difficulties in having to, you know, to execute their duties. Because if they are performing some sacrifices, then the demons will actually come and mess up the whole place. They pour down rain, urine, in the form of urine, like rain, and completely disrupt the whole of their sacrifices. So they were in anxiety, and the demigods, having seen this, wanted to actually see that the Lord actually comes to the rescue. Because one may question that, why couldn't the demigods just come to the rescue? Sometimes the demons are even more powerful than the demigods. We find several cases in the Bhagavatam where they take over even the heavenly planets. And so why do the demigods? Because they depend on the mercy of the Lord, so they pray to the Lord for the Lord to descend. And the Lord did descend as Lord Ramachandra and his expansions. Technically, it's a quadruple expansion, quadruple incarnation. Quadruple means four. So here we find a situation where Lord Ramachandra appeared by Dasarath having to perform some jaga. Four kids were born to his wives, and Ramachandra specifically took birth as Kausalya's son, Bharata, from Kekai. But in the Prabhupada mentions in one of these purports that Kekai was actually very much service oriented to Dasarath, that she even nursed him and facilitated his victory in a battle. Therefore Dasarath wanted to, you know, please her. And so if someone does something good, if even she's your wife, if even the person is your wife, or if even is your child, you want to show some appreciation. So Dasarath asks for any boon that I can actually give to you. And so there was some sense of detachment there. So she said, don't worry, when it's appropriate, I mean, right now I don't need anything, I'm like an octet electron, I'm satisfied with everything, all the facilities in place. But when a need arises, I will request, I'll make some request. So when Dasarath was making all of these arrangements to coronate Lord Ramachandra, then Kekeyi's maid was very much envious of the situation and instigated her to make moves to banish Ram and instead request for Dasarath to coronate her son, Bharata. And this was very displeasing to Dasarath. In the Ramayana, it is indicated several times how Dasarath lost consciousness. He fainted just because of the demand of Kekeyi that Ram should be banished and Bharata should be coronated as a king. So here is a situation where someone demanded, you want to become a king. And just recently, this type of situation happened in Africa, and the guy got killed. He won election, he was to be the president of the country. Imagine when you win election to be the president of the country, and someone comes from nowhere to say, no, you stop him. He should not be the president of this country. So the guy revenged and, you know, he flew off, he went to reinforce himself, he wanted to go into war. And it was people advise him, I mean, it's not good to just go into war because you want to be the head of state or the president. Just leave everything to God. But his opponents didn't just leave it to God. When he came back, they put him to jail. And in fact, he died in jail. They poisoned him in jail and killed him there. So it is very difficult. What Ramachandra did, that sense of detachment, that you want to be coronated the king. Imagine the president, someone won election in this country, and from nowhere they stopped him. No, you can't be sworn in as the president of this country. It could cause so much of trouble. But this is exactly what Ramachandra passed through. But he accepted it in good faith. Although Dasarath fainted like 5 times, he lost consciousness like 5 times just by that news. He couldn't even believe his ears that you have to banish Ram and coronate my son Bharat as a king. So the stories that we hear in the scriptures, these pastimes, they could actually give us a lot of things to learn from. The Bhagavatam, in this very chapter, it explains the opulence of the kingdom that Lord Ramachandra just completely abandoned and obeyed his father, went into the forest. Can we imagine? You have a big project in ISKCON. A big project is blooming. And the GBC said, Prabhu, you have to relocate. You have to leave this place and go. Thank you very much for developing this project. But we want you to go and develop another project in this country. We have seen your skills. You have expertise in this field. You have developed this project very nicely. So we want you to go to such and such a country to develop another project like this. How many of us can even hear that, not to talk of, you know, taking it in good faith? This is exactly what happened to Lord Ramachandra. He exhibited a higher sense of detachment. Detachment. Now, if Ramachandra exhibited that sense of detachment, is it just for the sake of making a show of detachment as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Obviously, no. It is for us to learn something from that. So he left the kingdom, went into the forest. But Lakshman couldn't actually take it, he couldn't bear it. He said, I'll go with you. His wife couldn't bear the separation. She said, I will go with you. I mean, it's like someone who has been sentenced to jail. And the brother said, no, I can't bear it. I'll go to jail with you. And then the wife comes and says, no, I can't bear it. I must come to the jail with you. These things are heavy. Let's be frank. We hear the stories, but sometimes, you see, we need to reflect deeply what that implies to us. These are deep incidences that we really need to imbibe a culture of a sense of detachment, a culture of love, a culture of affection. Traditionally, we find that Lord Ramachandra, although he was willing to go alone, when his brother Lakshman petitioned him that he wants to go with him, he subscribed to it. When his wife came to petition that she will go with him, he resonated with that. Again, we'll find that he has his own intentions, he has his own projections, he has his own plans or what to do. But when his associates come to petition that this is my proposal, he listened to them with a sense of compassion. Sometimes we want to do a particular thing. This is my line of thought. No advice. If even we get the best of advice, or someone comes to wish us well, this I think is better we do it in this way. No. But even Lord Ram, he exhibited this sense of compassionate listening. So apparently he was the one troubled, but some his associates were equally troubled. So they wanted to share the pain. That is the whole idea. They wanted to share the pain with Lord Ramachandra. That's why they said, we will go with you. Now, another thing I really wanted to bring up also is that when Ramachandra, at the termination of everything else, he came back home victorious, killed Ravan, came back to Ayodhya. And within that period, Bharata was supposed to be the king. Lord Bharata was supposed to be the king. He rather placed the sandals, the wooden sandals of Lord Ramachandra on the throne and was worshipping them as Lord Ramachandra himself. He had the opportunity to become the big guy, the boss. But he thought, no way. Lord Ram is my Lord. If even is not physically here, he placed his shoes on the throne. And that became his object of worship. So, we'll find a situation where people are so desperate to take over the maneuver, there's so many machinations just to be able to, you know, get someone out of the track and take over. And that happens a lot in the political arena. In administrative setting, we find all of these competitions going on. But Bharata was not interested in simply taking over the throne of Lord Ramachandra. In fact, because of that incident, Bharata hated his own mother like anything. The mother created an avenue for him to become a king, but he hated his mother. So again, we have to look at this and reflect upon what if I were in that in Bharata's shoes, what would I have done? The person who's supposed to be the king, he's been driven away. I have been given the chance to be the king. I think most of us would say, crown me immediately. I've been waiting for this position for a long time. He's been driven away. What are you waiting for? Just crown me, just now. Now, another thing also I like to share is when Lord Ram came back amidst all of this trouble, this type of abuse from his stepmother. This is a typical case of abuse. But Lord Ramachandra, of course we may say he's the Supreme Personality of God, but he taught us by his own personal example how we should live our lives. When he came back, he didn't hold any grudges against Mother Kekeyi. And you know what? As he entered the kingdom of Ayodhya and met Bharat, the very first person that Lord Ramachandra was concerned about was the person who abused him the most, Mother Kekeyi. The first person that Ram asked about her welfare was Mother Kekeyi. This is heavy. We find a situation where we see that this person, he hurt me, or she really hurt me. Right now I'm dealing with situations in a movement where people felt offended or felt hurt, and they just openly tell you, Maharaj, it is very difficult to forgive this person. I'm still feeling the pain. It's so difficult. How do I deal with that? And then, you know, see the case of Ramachandra. If to forgive is such a nasty thing, then the Lord wouldn't have exhibited this sense of forgiveness. Not only sense of forgiveness, genuine compassion, unmotivated compassion, and loving care for the person who even offended him the most. Imagine if you are the temple president of this place and then some devotees come to make some, you know, some allegations, some false allegations, and then they say, get him out of this place. He's a dealer. Get him out. And then succeeded in getting him out. And then they find that, he didn't actually do anything. It's all false allegations. Get him back here. Sometimes it happens like that. I remember a case in Africa. You know, this devotee, he had developed a big project, and then, you know, some devotees who were simply didn't want to see him, or they wanted to get out of the place as soon as possible. They make some false allegations here and there, and then, you know, he has to relocate, get to another place, and then again, the same people, they wanted him to, you know, come back to that place. So he said, I go forward and backward never. So, but the point is, suppose, you know, they come to push us out, and then we come back, and then we know that these are the guys who actually, you know, who were against me, who made the false allegations, and then defamed me, and got me out of this project of my service. And then when we come back to that service, well, how are we to look at those people? Ramachandra is demonstrating here how we should take it. That we should not nurse any grudges against church persons. Because sometimes we hear the philosophy and it's a little bit difficult to practice when it comes to real life situation. And so Lord Ramachandra appeared as a king to set an exemplary standard for leadership. But not only did he set an exemplary standard for leadership, he did function as a social reformer to be able to create a viable future for members of his constituency. It's like you read it, the historiography of Prithu Maharaj. These kings, they are a good setting for us to emulate, to see what is entailed in leading a community. So there are many, many things there in the life of Ram which demonstrate his impartiality. And his sense of compassion, love, and care for the person who offended him the most is something that we should try to imbibe in our society. Because in this material world, we will always have people who will be against us. And if we also react instead of proacting, then we create a community of enemies and friends. And ideally, because we are struggling to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to be able to radiate an energy of compassion and love without really minding the impact of whatever someone has done on our bodies and physical bodies and subtle bodies. Because whatever pain we have from someone's wrong dealings, whatever wounds we have from someone's wrong dealings with us, is just having to do with the physical body and the subtle body. And even that, it does not remove one follicle of air from our bodies. And therefore, it's essential for us to understand, to learn the implications of Lord Ram's activities. It is very important for us. And for leadership, he demonstrated how to take care of his constituency, taking care of members of his constituency, just like he took care of his own immediate family. There is a particular leadership style that is very much in vogue in the secular setting. It's called servant leadership. Servant leadership is one of the leadership styles even in the academics, in leadership studies. But shockingly, one of the principles of servant leadership, they may of course not practice it. We're not seeing the politicians practice that. But one of the principles of servant leadership is that the servant leadership should provide for the needs of his constituency just like he would provide for the needs of his immediate family. I don't think the politicians are doing that. And that principle is right there in the Bhagavatam. I wonder whether the people who formulated those policies or those leadership styles whether they have some chance to, you know, run into the Bhagavatam. But that principle is there in the Bhagavatam, that a king must provide first for the needs of his and the members of his kingdom before even his. Therefore, to be a leader, we have to understand it's different from being a manager. A manager does things right. A leader does the right thing at the right time for the general upliftment of members of his constituency. A leader goes the way and shows the way. This is exactly what Ramachandra demonstrated. That even his own wife, just by hearing some sarcastic statement from someone who told his wife, "You think I'm Lord Ramachandra?" Is Ram sent his wife, put his wife apart, just to demonstrate his sense of integrity. When there is a violation of social, spiritual, economic, or political integrity, the society runs amok. Therefore, we have to understand that Lord Ram, his appearance is a big blessing to us. We have to learn the lessons, the little lessons we can imbibe from his own the practical demonstration in his own life. Because we are struggling to build a spiritual community where everyone can actually participate and derive some benefits from. So it's essential for us to know that what this great personality, these incarnations, have come to demonstrate with their own personal lives is worth the while for us to be able to emulate. We should reflect on some of these few things about Ramachandra's life. His extreme sense of compassion, love for his most offender. And then we'll be able to try to build our life revolving around this principle. And then it could be easy for us to create a congenial atmosphere where everyone will be able to have a sense of belonging. Hare Krishna. Are there some comments or some questions on this point? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you very much for your class. Very much appreciated. I take it when you mention compassion, you are meaning compassion derived by spiritual advancement. Although, you know, we can practice that also independently of our spiritual advancement. The real compassion arises from being under the internal energy of the Lord as we progress in our spiritual life. So there are also many religions that also practice compassion to a certain extent, but it's a little bit hypocritical. They kill animals and then they try to be compassionate to humans. So could you make a comment on that, the difference between material and spiritual compassion?
Yeah. If you go into the etymology of that word compassion, you realize that compassion really implies taking the burden of others. That is the etymological meaning of the word compassion. It implies taking the burden of others. And who takes the burden of others? It's only it only connotes a spiritual construct. It is only the acharya who takes the burden of others. It's only the spiritual master who takes the burden of the world. Now, that is the deep meaning of compassion. Now, a lighter meaning of compassion means that we have to show concern for people and arrange for their spiritual needs. And what is a spiritual need? People need spiritual nourishment. Lord Chaitanya actually came to inaugurate this Sankirtan movement. And that's why Lord Chaitanya is referred to as the most magnanimous incarnation. Sometimes we'll find people who are, like you said, people who are supposedly very religious, but they, after their own salvation, they want to save their own neck. Again, you rightly mentioned, they kill animals. I remember one time, I went to a conference. It was like an interfaith seminar, and the organizers of this interfaith seminar, they are not even vegetarians. And they are talking about, cruelty to animals. We should avoid cruelty to animals. So I couldn't really tolerate it. So when I wanted to present my paper, so I asked, I just challenged everybody in the hall. I said, so how many of you here are vegetarians? They were shocked because, everybody just goes to present some paper and then it goes away in the name of scholarship. And so I asked them, so how many of you here are vegetarians? And none of them is a vegetarian. Even just to be a vegetarian, none of them. So just like you mentioned, people are just hypocritical. They hear some word, compassion, and whatever, but they're not. Another gross example is, you see in America, it is very common. You find people, keeping pets, dogs, cats, and all this. But they are eating the cow. I mean, it's like, you go to some home. Yesterday we visited some home to see a gentleman and his family. And his wife and him, we were discussing, all of the children were there. So, okay, I may say, I love this family, good, but I kill one of the members of the family. What's the question of love for the family when you kill one of the members of the family? So we keep pets and cats and dogs, and then we have to kill the cow, we have to consume the cow. The same family member of that cat and dog. So again, that your point is correct. People are just hypocritical. So on our own level, we can actually practice compassion. We may not be acharyas, but we can practice compassion by sharing what we have with others. Because by doing this, people will become enlightened about the objective criterion of human existence, and they may have a shift of paradigm. They may have a change of their mindset. Because generally people are suffering like anything. See, most of my works are in academics. That means I deal with all these professors and all these guys. But you go into the private life, they may ride big cars and, they feel very puffed up that they are, big guys, elites and all these things. But they are suffering like anything. I remember when I went to North Carolina Political Science Association annual conference in 2005, I presented just a simple thing. But, one of the professors, he's been a political science professor for 20 years at that time. Now he's about 29 or 28 years. He's been a political science professor. So, because before I went there, I told them, look, I told the president of that association, he had accepted that I should come to make a presentation. Let's see, I'm a priest. I don't have money to come and pay in your hotels. I don't have money. And therefore, this could be the reason why I wouldn't come. Then he said, he's a pious guy. Then he said, no, you come. I will make provisions where you will stay. So I went. Then the guy that he actually assigned me to stay in his apartment. He's also a professor who was visiting. Before we slept, he was watching the TV, so he said, I'm glued to watching TV before I sleep. In fact, I put it on as I sleep. I hope you don't mind. I said, no, Adam, I'm a liberal guy. I'm the liberal type of priest. Don't worry. You know what? I had a short discussion with that professor. And he asked some few questions. I responded. He's a pious person, apparently. Before he left, he gave me his complimentary card that he wants me to come and meet his family, his wife and children. But after the conference, he traveled to Russia for a project. And then also I traveled out. At that time, I was a brahmachari. And then when I came back, I called him on the phone. So we spoke briefly. And you know what he told me? Some of them are sincere. He said, Mr. Das, I taught as a professor for over 20 years. I taught, a political science professor for that matter. I thought I knew everything on this planet. But after meeting you, I realized these are his words. He said, after meeting you, I realized I don't know anything. And then he added, in fact, I wanted to go and throw away my PhD because I realized I don't know. These are his words. He said, I wanted to go and throw away my PhD because I realized I don't know anything. So some people are sincere. Some people are not. We do have, ways of trying to evaluate or trying to, boost our ego. But some people, they may be karmis, but they are sincere to the core. Therefore, there are some people who just go about parading themselves as compassionate people and they make some, they champion different causes. But they do that just for fame, distinction, and adoration. Just for some profit. Therefore, you find all of so many institutions, so many non-governmental organizations championing different causes against wars and all these things. You're fighting. I went to India for a conference in South India at University of Pondicherry just last year in February. The conference was on integrating spirituality and organizational leadership. Everybody, all of these Indian professors, everybody knows about Bhagavad Gita and the Puranas and they quote these verses and they talk big. But right there in the hall, right there, they're eating meat. So I called the organizer of the conference. That, you see, you have organized a good forum. But right here, you guys are being hypocritical. You know very much that meat, killing of animals is violence. And you're talking about this conference, the theme of this conference is integrating spirituality and organizational leadership. You want to show how the faults in the organizational setting in terms of leadership are rooted in deficiencies of spiritual culture. But violence, is it a spiritual norm? She's a lady who organized that conference. She was dumbfounded. But I was just frank, down to earth. So, the same lady, last December when I went to India, so I sent my personal servant in Delhi to go and pick up the book because they published a big book from the proceedings of that conference. And my presentation was there, so I sent my personal servant in Delhi to go and pick the book. So the lady, that professor, she thought that I'm just some other Indian guy who just stays in the U.S. So they were discussing about herself and my personal servant. So when she raised that issue, that scholar who stays in the U.S., that Indian guy. So the boy, my personal servant, told him that, no, he's not an Indian guy. He's from Africa. So just by that, she felt very challenged. She started making arrangement with the boy. No invitation. She started making arrangement with the boy how she could come to the temple. Because I raised some things at a conference, how the scholars are just being hypocritical. They're talking about spirituality. Right here, they are, helping to consume animals, which is rooted in violence. So there are a lot of this hypocrisy that goes on. But it's, you see, it is also not good for us to just sit back and then, you know, say, oh, these guys are hypocritical, they do like this. What are we doing to be able to revamp the situation? What are we doing to be able to help, to facilitate the situation being improved upon? That should be our concern. Therefore, yes, it is true. Our practice of compassion should begin with ourselves. If we have compassion for ourselves, we will take spiritual life seriously. We will come to the programs. We will try to show love for each other. So that is the level of practice. In fact, when as devotees, whatever we are doing, we should think, is this pleasing to Prabhupada? And whatever we are doing, we should ask ourselves, if everyone is doing like I'm doing, what will ISKCON be like? Yes. Each time anything we are doing, we should reflect a moment and ask ourselves, if everybody is doing what I am doing, how will this impact on ISKCON? ISKCON is Prabhupada. Prabhupada is not different from ISKCON. Therefore, we have to practice just the basic things that Prabhupada has given to us, and we will see how we can change the world for better. That should be our utmost desire, to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, to pursue the goals of Prabhupada, to pursue the vision of Srila Prabhupada, in changing the world to make it a better place for people to live. Hare Krishna. So shall we stop there? Someone was raising a hand. Can I take that question afterwards? Because I'm conscious of time. We have eaten 15 minutes into the time already. And, you know, people here, people are busy. They have to go to work and they have to go do the services and all the rest of them. I hated chopping into the time. I'm conscious of time. So you can ask when we close the class. Huh? Okay. Kesava said we can take 5 more minutes. So those who like to go and take prasadam already for your services and job, you can go. Yes, so what's your question? About
forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Okay.
You know, sometimes if you're hurt, it goes really deep. And even though you feel like you want to forgive a person, or you say you've forgiven them, but it's so deeply rooted.
Right.
In that case, what do you do? How can you cure that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we find that, you know, sometimes people preach about forgiveness, but they themselves, they don't forgive anybody. So again, it's hypocritical. Because we have to be practical. Let's understand the fact that to forgive is, and the forgiveness itself is a complex construct that could be, of course, is operationalizable. In other words, it could be measured, but it's not so easy. One can just say, I have forgiven you. But some people are sincere. I remember a case where, you know, someone was offended, and then, you know, this devotee was advised to go and, you know, beg for forgiveness from the person that he has offended. Huh? And he went to pay obeisances. He went to pay obeisances to the person that he had offended. So the guy just, you know, he left the place. He just walked and left. He quickly left the place quickly, okay? So you don't know what he's saying. You nonsense. Oh, come on. Get out from here. So it's not easy. If even someone comes to beg for forgiveness, it's so difficult for us to forgive. But you see the case of Lord Ramachandra. The person that abused him the most is the person that he was really after her welfare. He came and then KK was the first person Lord Ramachandra asked about her welfare. So for us, we would have asked such and such a person, is he still here? Or is he dead? Is he gone? Has he blooped? He's been very offensive all these years. He has not blooped yet. So yes, Mataji, it is difficult to forgive, but we have to be courageous. We have to pray to Srila Prabhupada. We have to pray. You see, if we, let's get these points clear. If we need something that relates to other people, and we pray to Krishna, we pray to the spiritual master, very quickly, they answer our prayers. You know, the highest prayer you could do is to pray for another devotee. Lord Krishna, Srisi Radha Sama Sundar, Srisi Krishna Balaram, Srisi Gauranitai, this devotee, he is or she is working so hard for you. Please bless him. Please bless her. Try this. And you see how in just a short while, most of the anantas that have been causing some hindrance on our part of spiritual cultivation will be dissipated. Just by wishing someone else good. Normally we wish ourselves good. But try to wish someone else good. And so, it is important that we understand Krishna responds to our petition. Especially when we are struggling with an obstacle like forgiveness, how to forgive someone. We don't have the power to do it in most cases. Therefore, we should resort to prayers. We should pray to the Lord to give us the strength to be resolute and be able to execute that plan. Because it takes one thing. If we just say, well, I don't want to forgive anyway. But if we want to forgive and we're having difficulty, we should pray to the Lord. He will actually create an avenue where we will be courageous enough to be resolute in that and execute that plan, execute that order. There's one thing, making a proposition or a resolution and execution. So if we have resolved to do it, the execution may be difficult. And there are intrinsic and extrinsic factors which affect the execution of a resolution. But all those factors, they are completely under the care of Lord Krishna and the spiritual master. Therefore, if we have some good heart, we're wishing someone well, we don't want the person to go bizarre with all of the reactions, then we should pray to the spiritual master, we should pray to their lordship to give us the strength to be able to, you know, to forgive. And it works in that way. If someone tells you to just forgive somebody, it's so easy. What are you talking about? It's just forgive. But then, you know, you may say, I forgive you. And then in your inner heart, you don't really forgive the person. Which is also good that at least you tell the person you forgive. You're forgiving the person. But it could be so gross that, I mean, you just say, but this is too much for you. How can I forgive you? I got a letter from someone, and then, you know, she felt so hurt by the manager of the temple. And then she said, how can I forgive this person? So if we resolve not to forgive the person, it's a different thing. But if we want to forgive the person, and if we have knowledge about the gravity of forgiveness, the implications of nursing grudges against someone, naturally we would like to forgive someone. Because if we are nursing grudges, it's like we are carrying a heap of, you know, charcoal on our heads. It's heavier than even the person that is a perceived offender. Therefore, there is a need for us to, you know, resolve to forgive. And even forgiveness, it looks like a spiritual principle or a religious concept or construct, but there is so much of research work that's been done on forgiveness, the impact of forgiveness on the social milieu. So it's not just a spiritual principle, a spiritual concept, but it is a big thing out there, even in the secular world. So many researchers, social scientists, they make some researches on forgiveness, and they've realized the importance of forgiveness in shaping people's lives. So this is not just some religious doctrine. It is a scientific fact that forgiveness creates a congenial atmosphere for the offender and for the offended. Yes. And that's the question. That's a good question. It has to come from our heart. First, we have to at least accept in principle that I want to forgive this person. And if we accept in principle that we want to forgive this person, we should go ahead to execute that will by telling the person, yes, I've forgiven you. And it should be something that comes from our heart. Forgiveness has to come from the heart, because verbally only is not enough. Verbally, at least, is better than the one that you don't really acknowledge the fact that you are forgiven. But then the sentiments has to be also be cleansed off by really being open to the idea. But with knowledge, it becomes easy. If you understand that if you don't forgive, you are actually carrying a heavy load yourself, then who wants to carry a load? And naturally, but in most cases, people don't understand the implications of not forgiving. And so, I mean, they just nurse those grudges for years, but then it has a negative impact on their own life. So we know that we are forgiving someone when we are actually becoming free from that type of meditation. And for devotees, it's essential for us to be forgiven. Lord Ram demonstrated that in his own life. Yes. We are human beings. We can't pretend otherwise. We are human beings. Someone can hurt us. We have feelings. Let's not pretend otherwise. Even the Paramahamsas, you can hurt them. But the thing is, they control themselves. You hurt them, but they control themselves. They don't take it as anything. But the condition, so you hurt them, they don't control themselves. They call the police. Yeah. So, can we stop there? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada ki. Mm-hmm.